WYPR is here to keep you connected to your community. And as our communities change amid the coronavirus pandemic, that connection is more important than ever before. Member support makes it possible. And if you can, we hope you'll help us out. If you're a sustaining member, consider increasing your monthly pledge or become a new member with a first-time gift. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link. And thanks.
This is Anibon Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report.
Well, another weekend has ended. It will be quite a while until the next one. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't think about what you will do when Friday rolls around. Perhaps you will spend your next weekend in the great outdoors. You would not be alone. The U.S. Commerce Department recently released data indicating how much outdoor recreation contributed to economic output in 2016. Department analysts conclude that outdoor recreation accounted for 2% of gross domestic product that year, or more than $370 billion, roughly equivalent to Maryland's annual economic output. Growth in the outdoor recreation economy easily outstripped that of the broader economy, rising by nearly 4% in nominal terms compared to less than 3% nominal growth in overall economic output. The value of outdoor recreation encompasses a broad range of activity. Take a fishing trip as an example. As indicated by writer Sarah Cheney, the Commerce Department's measure includes everything from the production of the fishing rod and fuel for the boat to the cost of a fishing license and the partial salary of a park ranger. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.
This is Anibon Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report.
The fact that African-American unemployment has been low by historic standards recently has been in the news quite a bit. In December of last year, African-American joblessness declined to 6.8%, an all-time low. But as noted in the New York Times and elsewhere, the achievement of that all-time low was bittersweet, given that the rate of joblessness among African-Americans remained twice the rate for whites. Moreover, African-American unemployment then climbed back to 7.7% in January, which would likely be considered a crisis level for the broader economy. And it's not simply that joblessness among African-Americans remains elevated. It's that African-Americans also earn far less than others. African-American workers with a high school diploma as their highest level of educational attainment take home 22% less than whites with the same credential. Those with graduate degrees fall nearly as far behind their Caucasian peers. In 2016, the typical annual pay for an African-American working full-time was a bit under $40,000. That compares to $52,000 for whites. For WYPR and my esteemed producer, Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.
This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday Morning Economic Report.
It's not surprising that when a person loses a job, the chances that they will fall behind on their debt payments rise. As pointed out by writer Josh Mitchell, during the recession, which began in 2007, delinquencies on all types of consumer debt spiked. But the economy began to stabilize in 2009, and by 2011, delinquencies on credit card debt, auto loans, and mortgages declined as unemployment fell. But remarkably, even as the economy has continued to recover, student loan delinquencies never really tapered off. They continued to rise through 2012 and have remained exceptionally high ever since. At 2018's onset, 11% of the nearly $1.4 trillion in outstanding student debt was delinquent. That means that the account hasn't received a payment in at least 90 days. The 11% figure almost assuredly understates the problem. Roughly half of student debt is held by borrowers who aren't required to make payments because they're still in school or for other reasons. That suggests that the real delinquency rate is more like 22%. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.
This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday Morning Economic Report.
One could argue that the U.S. economy has been booming. Home prices have been rising. Stock prices have surged. Small business optimism recently attained all-time highs. Business investment as a percentage of gross domestic product is about as high as it's been since the recession. Unemployment recently declined to an 18-year low. Job creation remains brisk, and employers report growing difficulty filling available positions. But through it all, one key economic indicator remains subdued: wage growth.
As indicated by writer Noah Smith, superficially, wage growth looks healthy. In January, hourly earnings rose 2.9% from a year earlier. That was the best performance in years. But consumer prices increased 2.1% during the same period, which means that real hourly earnings expanded by just 0.8%, less than half the real rate of growth for the overall economy. In terms of real wage growth, 2017 was a so-so year. And for non-supervisory workers, wage growth was especially slow. The biggest real wage gains since the recession actually came in 2015, thanks in large measure to a decline in energy prices. For WIPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Friday Morning Economic Report. Look up, look down, new technologies abound all around. The cars we drive, your cell phone, your laptop, your digital music, not to mention 3D printing, robotics, driverless vehicles, and artificial intelligence are all sources of wonder. And yet, despite the emergence of these technologies, productivity growth, measured in terms of output per hour worked, has been the weakest in decades around the world. Often we think of productivity as a supply-side phenomenon. Businesses invest in new technologies, empowering their workers to become more productive. But researchers increasingly believe that productivity growth also depends significantly on the demand side. In other words, advances in productivity do not occur simply because technology is newly available. As indicated by writer Neil Irwin, they also occur because companies need to step up production to meet demand for their goods. Shortages of workers and/or materials force producers to think more creatively about how to meet demand, and that helps produce productivity growth. Until recently, global growth was soft, which means that businesses didn't face a level of demand that induced an elevated level of creativity. For WIPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.